anisotropic fast marching and anisotropic metric. So far, the metric is depending only on the point where the curve passes by, and not on the shape of the curve. So now we're going to extend and make the energy depend on the orientation of the curve. So we saw yesterday the geodesic in the space x, y plus radius. So in order to find a path which corresponds to a thick curve, when a central axis plus the thickness, and we're going to see why. I mean, one reason for which anisotropy may be useful. So you see here a U shape, and we're going to use geodesic between two points on this U shape. And as we defined yesterday, we can define here the potential here is defined according to the radius. So you have a 2D plus R potential, and what you see, in fact, I'm not sure I can show you here. What you see here is for different radius, you get different response of the potential. So it is the potential I explained yesterday that is supposed to enhance parts where you are at the center of the tubular shape corresponding to this radius. So here, for a small radius, you see that it is. In fact, you have your U shape here, and for a small radius, the response will be maximal where your small circle is tangential to the U shape, to the tubular shape, which means that you have two parts where you have maximal response. And which correspond here, you can see two lines here where it is dark blue, which correspond to the minimal values of the potential. So this potential means that if you're looking for a curve which has a small radius, it will be prefer to go either here or here. So because this is not the good radius. So now if you increase this radius, you're going to have like this. So you're going to have two curves will be slightly different. And when you consider the real radius here, these two curves will merge in one curve. So there will be only one curve, and it corresponds here. You see that here you have two dark blue lines here as well, and here it starts to merge, and here you see that you have only one dark blue line in the center, which means that this is the preferred radius the curve should choose, which means that if you give these two endpoints, it will find this central axis and this radius. So it corresponds here, you see that it will prefer, this corresponds to the correct radius. So now, if you use the same energy, I had it here. In fact, if you use the energy we described here, and but take the points here, starting point, end point. You have a problem here to get the good path, which would be here, because it is a problem of shortcut. It means that the minimization prefers to take a short path with a high potential, because here you will have a high potential, but here you have a very low values of potential, but you have a very long path. So it means that if you integrate a very long path with lower values, it may give higher energy than if you take a very short path with higher potential. So this is what happens here, and this is what happens in many cases, this problem of shortcut. So now this should not happen if you know that you have information on the orientation of the path. So here, if you extract from the image some information which say that if you have a tubular shape here, this tubular shape should be vertical, then it should be penalized because here you have an horizontal path. So this is what we are going to see now, is that we can include into the energy a dependence on the orientation of the path, which for this example here, it will allow you to find the good path, because this path, even if it's shorter with higher energy, it will be highly penalized because it doesn't correspond to the expected orientation of the path here. So sorry. So in fact, the general, I mean, not general, but the formulation that we will use for this orientation-dependent energy is using this Riemannian metric. So you assume that at each point of the image domain, you have a matrix H. So H is a tensor field, which represents the anisotropy, the dependence in the orientation. Which means that here, what you have here, you define the energy over a path, a curve gamma, as being the integral of square root of gamma prime H gamma prime, which corresponds here to this, the local metric is enhanced by this matrix H. So to understand the relation with what we did before, here in the case H is the identity everywhere, you have here just square root of gamma prime, which is the length of gamma prime, the Euclidean length. So here you correspond to a geodesic path. This metric corresponds to what we saw before with potential equals 1. Now if you take H equals W times identity, then this corresponds to the integral of W over, not exactly W, we'll see precisely in a moment, but this corresponds to what we saw before. So the case that we saw so far, which now we may call isotropic metric, is a case where H here is identity times something. So this appears as to be an extension of what we've done so far, and we can define the geodesic distance between two points, which this as being the minimal value of this energy among all paths that connect X and Y. So to take the same definition as we had so far, so if S is a set of points, US of X will be the minimum among all points of S of the distance between X and XK. Where this distance is this geodesic distance in the sense of this Riemannian metric. So the good news is that this definition leads to an Nyquanol equation. And we can basically extend what was done before. But the bad news is that it's not so easy. So the first thing that if you define U here as before, the minimal action which corresponds to the geodesic distance to one point or a set of points, it still satisfies this Nyquanol equation, Hamilton-Jacobi equation, where instead of having norm of gradient U equals 1, the norm here is to be taken according to the metric H minus 1, which means where here the norm according to the matrix A is equal to square root of VTAV. So here it corresponds to the norm of the gradient U according to where here you have H minus 1 at each point. With boundary condition UX0 of X0 equals 0, which is always the same since the energy between the geodesic distance between the point and itself is 0. Now, once you solve this equation, you can find a minimal geodesic using gradient descent. So before it was gradient descent according for in the direction minus gradient U. Now this direction of descent is moved according to H minus 1. So this is the formula of the gradient descent. It will be H minus 1 gradient U over this norm. So starting from an endpoint, you make this gradient descent till you reach the starting point, and you follow the geodesic curve. So now these two things, the two steps, so Nyquanol equation, gradient descent, we can see that we have the same thing as we had before in the case where H is identity times something. So if at each point X of the image domain, you define the metric as being W of X identity. So W of X is a scalar value. Then if you replace this here, you see that the norm according to W, H minus 1 will be 1 over W identity. And so it will be 1. You can make the computation. So you will find here norm of gradient U equals W. In fact, I wonder if that's H minus 1. It looks like a square root that should be there. Okay. So now, if in the case H is identity times W, this gradient descent corresponds to the classical gradient descent, since H minus 1 is identity times something, it disappears. So it gives the usual gradient descent. So it means that the case W times identity corresponds to the isotropic case we saw with a potential. Okay. So now we can see a simple example to illustrate this the geodesic according to this anisotropic metric. So at each point you have a matrix H. This matrix H defines you can find the two eigenvalues and eigenvectors, and you can represent the local tensor as an ellipse that indicates you the principal orientation. So here what is shown is not the eigenvalues. I mean, the orientation of the ellipse corresponds to the orientation of the eigenvectors, but the length of the ellipse here corresponds to the inverse of the eigenvalues in order to give to show what are the preferred orientation of the curve, which means that if you consider this orientation, it will correspond to the minimal energy. So it means that the energy here, the energy H can be represented by lambda 1, the E1 is the first eigenvector, and lambda 2, E2 is the second eigenvector. So this this ellipse, in fact, represents the ellipse, the unit ball, according to the metric, which means that if here you are in the direction E1, so here you see lambda 1 smaller than lambda 2, so here if you are in the direction E1, it means that you'll have H equals lambda 1, so you'll have a smaller value of the energy, so you will prefer, so since you minimize the energy, you will prefer to go in the direction of E1 rather than in the direction of E2. So it means that here the length, the metric here is smaller, which means that the Euclidean length of the ellipse is longer. Okay, so this ellipse here corresponds to this unit ball, and in fact the length of the ellipse here is 1 over square root of lambda 1, 1 over square root of lambda 2. And so this representation here shows the preferred orientation of a minimal geodesic, which means that a curve minimizing the energy will prefer to agree with the long axis of the ellipses. So in this example here, so if the metric is representing like this, you see that in this part you have an orientation, preferred orientation, which is this direction, but you see that the ellipse is close to be round. I mean, the difference between the two eigenvalues is not so large. So it means that the anisotropy is not so big. While in the right part of the image here, you have ellipses that are very elongated, which means that the anisotropy is large, and the preference for this direction is higher, much higher than other directions. So you see here the minimal path between this point and this point, and also the minimal action. And so you see that here this part of the path agrees with a good orientation, while this part is a little deviated from the long axis. So we see another example to illustrate this question of anisotropy. And here what we take as a metric is here you have a center point where you have circles. And at each point you have the metric H will be defined as preferring this tangential direction to the circle. So the ellipses are correspond to radial and the orientation one is radial, one is the orthogonal to radial, and what we see here is the result of the minimal path between P0 and P1 for here, and according to the anisotropy we put in the metric. In fact, the anisotropy is defined in the next slide. So what we call the anisotropy here is the difference between lambda 1 and lambda 2. So you see here lambda 1 is smaller than lambda 2, but if lambda 1 is very close to lambda 2, it means that it is not so much anisotropic. So the measure of anisotropy, what we call the measure of anisotropy, is alpha, is lambda 2 minus lambda 1 over lambda 2 plus lambda 1. So this measure of anisotropy here is shown to be, in fact, it's shown to be that from left to right, the anisotropy will be larger and larger. Or in fact, here it was even simpler. It means that the metric here is the second term here is twice the first, 4 times, 8 times, 16 times. So you see here that more and more you prefer the first direction, which will be the tangential direction. And so here what you see in green is the circle, I mean the circle that contain P1 and P0, which P1 and P2, which correspond to the what you expect to find. Now, if you take no anisotropy, so the isotropic case, so it has no reason to follow a circle, it will take a straight line. So this is in pink here, the minimal path is a straight line. So there's no anisotropy. So now if you increase anisotropy, you see that the curve starts to get closer to a circle, and here you get very close to a circle. So you see the effect of anisotropy. So when you increase this anisotropy in the metric, you really make the orientation preferred, the orientation corresponding to the smallest eigenvalue being much more preferred in the orientation of the minimal curve. So what you see here is starting from we'll see later on. So here, this is another example of the same thing, which means that you see the difference between with the same orientation, but anisotropy is getting larger and larger. So what you see here, it is an image of an oriented texture, where from this image, the local orientation is extracted and is used as the orientation of the first eigenvalue. So from at each point, you define a metric H, which is where E1 and E2 are found from the local orientation. And you can say lambda 1, for example, equals 1. And lambda 2 is defined in order to have the anisotropy equals to 0, 0.5, 0.7, 0.95. So which means that here you have no anisotropy. You have this, you have an isotropic potential, even a constant potential. And what is shown here is the starting point is at the center of the image domain, and for points along the boundary, you see the minimal path between the starting point and all these points. So you see all these paths. Here are straight lines. In the case of the isotropic case with a constant potential, you have the minimal action correspond to circles, the Euclidean distance, and the minimal path to straight line. So now if you increase the anisotropy, you see that the more and more the minimal path, so you see the same thing between the center and all the points around, will try to agree more and more with the orientation of this image. So it's sometimes it's not possible. It's difficult to agree exactly with this image, which has a very special orientation. But you see that basically in many places, for example here, you have this curve, it corresponds to this orientation. Or you can see anywhere. So when you have a very large anisotropy, it makes it very close to the orientation here. So when you have anisotropy which is smaller, It means that it will prefer this orientation when it can be done, but it is not penalized so much. So if it will prefer incident integration over the whole path, it will be taken into account, but not so much as it is a very soft constraint and not a hard constraint on orientation. Okay. Yeah, in fact, because the orientation you see here that you have some parts where it is somewhat complex, is the orientation. So. Could you tell it again? Yes. Which image? You mean this image? No, I'm not sure. I mean, here this is the isotropy case, where it means that you use a constant metric.
But your metric is not constant. Your metric is your image.
No, here what you defined is not the image. The metric is defined like this.
But how do we extract from the image?
No, the image appears only in the orientation. From the image we extract the local orientation. What? Oh, this is a local computation that gives you the based on the Hessian matrix of the image, which can extract the orientation of the lines here. But this is pre-processing, so it means that from this image you get an image of at each point you get the value of E1, which is the local tangent to the orientation. So now we define H as being lambda 1 E1, lambda 2 E2, where lambda 1 is equal to 1, and lambda 2 is defined according to isotropy. So isotropy equals 0, it means you have 1, 1, so you have a constant metric.
So what you have to do is if you take lambda 1 equal lambda 2, but you vary.
Yeah, of course you could do that, but the fact here is that it doesn't mean so much. I mean, here you have black lines, you have white lines. I mean, if you take the image, it means that it will try to follow the black line. But once again, if you take the path between the center here and the point here, it will also, as we saw before, I mean, if you have this doesn't work so well, but if you are here, you see that the black line here goes like this, and it the minimal path between this point and this point, for example, it will prefer to take shortcuts because the trying to find a black line in this image is not so What do you mean?
So, what you see as a black line is because your image is small. But if you have
then
the black line is just the domain, which is black, and
that's gray. And yeah, so. The purpose of this example is not to extract the line. The purpose is to show the influence of anisotropy on the geodesic obtained. So what you see here, the purpose is to see that if you take an isotropic, I mean a constant isotropic potential, you get straight lines everywhere. And when you increase this anisotropy, which means that here you have the same lambda 1 everywhere, but lambda 2 is varying according to I mean, you have everywhere the same lambda 1 and the same lambda 2, but you have E1 and E2 which change. So this, the only inference of orientation will make a very large difference in the path. This is what it is assumed to illustrate. So I'm not pretending that this is the best way to extract the lines here. This is not my purpose. Yeah. Yeah. So no, not with a constant image. So now, in fact, this is a repetition. But okay. So here in this image here, what you see here, we can extract the local geometry of the image. So this is based on some method called optimal oriented flux, which means that at each point you try to extract the local geometry, which means the local orientation and local similarity between the image and a tubular shape. So it means that at each point you'll get an ellipse, and this ellipse is taken as a matrix for this energy. Which means that here, where you have vessels, the extracted matrix will give elongated ellipses, while in the background you get ellipses that are not so much anisotropic. So here you have two information which are extracted. They are both an information of coming from the gray level of the image, and an information coming from the local orientation. And here, so this is what you saw yesterday, and this is the example I showed earlier, that here if you take a metric depending only on the point, on the location of the curve, I said at the beginning, that you get a shortcut. Now metric is takes into account the local orientation, which means that from the U-shape image it extracts the local geometry, and then you get here a metric that where you see here that you have elongated ellipses, vertical ellipses in the center, which correspond to the minimal values of the energy. And the minimal path between this point and this point here, even if it's much longer, it will prefer to take this path because the penalty you would get by this shortcut would be very high. So here you see an example, a simple example. So where you see this application, so here it is a model of 2D plus radius, where it uses a Riemannian metric according to extracting the orientation. So here you see the minimal path between these two points. So here you see the sequence of circles that go from one point to the other. And here you see the central axis and the width. And the okay. So here this is another example. And here you see the path in 3D, 2D plus radius. So you see here you recognize the shape here. And here you see that when it is higher, it corresponds to smaller radius. When it is in the bottom, it corresponds to the higher radius. And so here in this real image, what you see obtained from this metric. So you see that starting point and point, and you see the central axis plus your the width of the vessel. Okay, so if you give, as we said, many endpoints, you get the complete description of the vessels in the image.
So,
yes. What's different is that it is. I mean, the anisotropic metric makes it easier to find the good orientation. I mean, it makes. I mean, in this image, it doesn't match. Mean big difference. You are right, but in a more difficult image, it would avoid some shortcuts or some wrong paths, because it takes into account the local orientation. Yes. Yes, you can see that it's like this. Yes. Okay. So this was used for vessels, but if you're looking for roads in aerial images, you can also do the same. And what you see here is starting point and point, and you find a path that goes along the roads between these two points. So this is an example in 3D plus radius, and this is another example. So where here you see the central axis and the vessel around the central axis. So okay, this is another example, and so here you have one starting point and many endpoints. And you see the complete vessel. What? No, these are vessels.
Oh.
Okay. 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 Okay, so okay. Maybe I say a word on how. So this is how this anisotropic metric is defined. I mean, you may define it as you wish, but here this is a possible way to extract from an image the local orientation, which is called optimally oriented flux. And this is a function. I mean, you define this flux as being a function of the location x, an orientation v, and a radius r. So what you define is this: it is the flux of the gradient of the image in the direction v through a sphere of radius r centered at x. So this corresponds here to the projection of the gradient in the direction v, and this projection is then compared to the normal to the sphere. So now what happens is this flux here, what you see here, when you make variation on R and V, at a given point. What you see is that the here, for example, you have this object. The gradient I is a vector going inside. It is normal to the boundary and going inside. So here down, here up. And if you consider the and inside the gradient is small. So if you consider this integral over a sphere for a radius r, so this integral here is the values of the integral are concentrated here and here, where the gradient is not small. And here, the gradient is in this direction, which is opposite to the normal to the sphere. And here it is in this direction, which is opposite to the direction of the sphere. So now, if you consider direction v, this direction v, if you project gradient on the direction v, then if v is orthogonal, v is tangential here to the boundary, then the projection of gradient I on this direction is zero. So it will be it will give a flux that is close to zero if v is this direction. Now, if v is this direction, the projection of gradient on v is almost gradient I, and it will be give a large flux. So this means that the variation in according to v will give you a value that is small when it is not in the good direction and large when it is in the good direction. So this is the basic definition in order to obtain this matrix, because here if you consider this function of v, you can see that it is a quadratic function of v. And so in fact, you can define this at each point x as a quadratic form, so which means that you are looking for the matrix of this quadratic form. So this can be done by computing the flux for different values of v, and then by least square estimation, you can find the quadratic form at the given point for a given r, and this quadratic form is what you are going to use for the anisotropic metric. So what you see here is that in this example is that it will give the best answer, where it is here centered at the on this tubular shape, and the sphere is tangential to both sides of the object. So you can see here. Okay. So here you can see the response to different values for different points x and for different values here of the orientation and of the radius. So what you see here is that in fact, if a point is outside, basically nothing interesting happens. I mean, I will not enter into details here. But here, if x here is at the very center of this structure here, it the behavior it has here, which means that the matrix you find for this quadratic form is very informative of what happens, and it can be it will prefer to locate in such a point in order to minimize the energy. Okay. So this was just a small insight. Okay. So now the next part is, in fact, different ways to find a closed control from a set of minimal paths. I mean, so far what you've seen is using a geodesic path between two points allows you to find an open curve, which can be a part of a control or, as I said, a tubular structure. So now we're going to see how you can obtain a closed control. So I don't know if you wish to stop now or later. Oh, okay. Okay, so now we will see a few methods that are based on geodesic tasks to find a closed control. So we'll see different ways to do that. And the very first attempt to do that was I tell about this because it is something that related some other way. But so you assume that you have a closed contour. This is what you're looking for, and geodesics, you give one point, and you get the path here. So if you wish to get a closed contour using geodesic path, a simple way to do this is to ask the user to click many points. So it could click this point, then click this point, then click this point, and each time you get the path between the new point and the previous point. And at the end you get this. So this is a very simple way to use geodesic path to get a closed control. Now the question we can ask is, can you do it automatically, which means that you don't wish to click many points, you just want to click one point. So if you click just this point, can you obtain the whole contour with a set of minimal tasks? So we'll see different ways. I mean, one way, in fact, is to say that I wish to find one of the points in fact, if I give one other point, this other point, the minimal geodesic will go this way, or if I choose it on this side, the geodesic path will go this way. Now, if the point here goes around the contour, what you see is that there will be one point for which the geodesic will be both on this side and this side. It means that the energy on this side and on this side will be the same. So this point here, if you find it, then you could say that from this point you find the two geodesic paths and you get the closed contour. Okay. So this is something that we proposed very long ago, which is interesting. But and another way we propose as well is to find from this starting point, we'll find many other points on the contour, which will enable to find the closed contour. So this first attempt, what you see here, is assume that you have this region here for which you wish to find the contour. You give a starting point, and here you have the minimal action from this starting point. What you see here is that you have here the contour you're looking for, and what you see is that on this minimal action you are you see that each point here along the contour is has a small value of potential, and so for each point, if you see orthogonally to the contour, you see that it is a minimum, local minimum of u in this direction. While at each point here, when you follow the contour, you see that u is increasing when you go this way, and u is increasing when you go this way. Do you understand what I'm showing? Or yeah. Okay. So what happens? The point you where the geodesics are the same, you have two geodesics, is in fact the point where u here is maximal. So here in fact u is increasing, this on this side, u is increasing on this side, and this point here corresponds to the maximum value of u in this direction. So here at this point you have a maximal, it is a maximum in this direction, and it is a minimum in this direction. So this is the saddle point of view. So you can see it also as well here with the level set. So starting from this point, you see that the front here goes this way and goes this way, and here the point we are looking for is the point where the front meets itself. I mean, the two parts of the front here, they meet here. Okay, so what it means here is that you're looking for a saddle point, and now there are many ways to define a saddle point. I'm not going into details here, but you have geometric ways or calculus ways of saying that a point is a saddle point. And a way to find this point will be, so here in the image, look after saddle points. So what you see here is that the white points are saddle points. But now among these saddle points, what you wish is that the point you wish to find is the point for which is on the contour. So it means that the potential of this point is not so large. And also it is on the contour, which means that the energy itself, U, is not so large as well. So when you put up these two constraints, this filters this point, and you can take the best point according to some this criteria, and you find the second point here. Okay, so this is a way to find, from given one point, you find the second point here, and you find the two geodesic, and you find the closed contour. So this is a way that works well in this example, but the reason it is not so much used is that it may be very unstable, this definition of saddle points, and also the choice of the saddle points to filter the saddle points. It depends on many parameters. So this is why we prefer some other ways, and in fact we propose now two ways to add auxiliary points. So the problem here, for example, I mean the problem can be the one we mentioned, to find the closed contour of an object. It can also be a problem of closing contour or contour completion, like this, where you have contours where you have holes. Or here you have two circles with holes, and you have also noise around. So this this is based on finding auxiliary points, and from a set of points, finding a set of paths. So there are two steps here. One step will be to find a set of points that represent the endpoints of minimal paths. And the second problem is, given, assume I am given a set of points here, how do we define that the contour here is this set of paths? Which means that I wish to say that this point has to be linked with this one and this one, and not with this one, for example. So what I wish is to give from a set of points, for example here, P0 to P3. I mean, this is a very simple example where nothing special happens, but this is just to explain the idea. So if I give these four points, each point can be linked to the three others. But for example, if you have an elongated ellipse like this, if you have the four points here, it may happen that this path will be good, this path will be good, this one also, but this one may be a shortcut. So in fact, what you wish is to find a closed curve and find a way to define these points here as points along this closed curve. So on a closed curve, each point, if you find this closed curve here, each point is neighbor to two other points, exactly two, or at most two. So what you wish is to find these two neighbors, so that you're not connected to everybody, to every other point. And once again, this is based on saddle points, because what we define here is, assume that you have given this point, so we'll see in a moment how to find the points, but assume that you have some points that are on the contour. Which point should be linked to which one? It is, what you do is that you make a front propagation of the fast marching simultaneously from all points, and you see which points we will meet first. So this is in fact what you see here. So what you see, you have three images, so you are going to see it again, but above you have the image where you have some pieces of contour, so you see that they are not complete. And the yellow points are assumed to have been found. And what you wish to do is to link the yellow points together to form a closed curve. So what we say is that we make a front propagation simultaneously from all these points. This is what you see here. And whenever two fronts meet here, this means that the points are neighbors. Now, if you go on the propagation, all the fronts will meet all the other fronts. So a point will be linked only to the first two points for which the fronts meet. So each time two fronts meet here, you put the minimal path corresponding to these two points above. So what happens in fact is it is related to the fact that here you have the Voronoi regions, and in fact you can tell that two points are linked if their Voronoi regions are neighbors. Actually, these are neighbor. The first two you choose only the first two regions that meet. So in this way, you are sure to have a close contour. So you see that each time you have a meeting, you add the corresponding path, and at the end, you have the complete contour. Yes. Yeah. Yes. So the fact is, this means that you'll have to have many points. So if you have a very elongated ellipse, it means that you will not be able to find the result with a few points. And this is why, in fact, I didn't say yet how to find these yellow points. For the moment, what I say is that from this set of yellow points, this is a way to find this closed curve. Now, how to find this curve, these points? In fact, you have two ways that we present now. One way is an idea related to what we saw yesterday, or with the furthest point strategy, where here you choose the first point P0 on the contour, and from this point you compute the minimal action. You have this front propagation here, and then you consider among all points that are here, you consider the furthest point, which means the point that has the largest geodesic distance to the first one. And so here it will be the point P1 here. And if you think about it, this point P1 in this case, it is the same point P1 that I discussed earlier. This is my first saddle point here. So P1 here. Then I update the geodesic distance to the two points P0 and P1. And then again, I find on this image the furthest point to P0 and P1. It will be P2. And then I update it, the geodesic distance map. Then I am looking for the furthest point, which will be P3. and then P4, etc. So I can iterate this process whatever iteration, and at each iteration, when I update this, I also keep track of the saddle points and the in order to solve this thing here. So at the same time, you add points, you keep track of which point has to be linked to which other. And then you, in this example, you get here, you get these points and the saddle points corresponding here. And you get here the set of minimal paths gives a complete ellipse. So which was obtained. So this means that the idea here is that you give one starting point, P0, and then you find iteratively other points that in fact cover the same way we used it for remeshing. In this case, it is a way to remesh the objects that we don't know yet. I mean, you obtain regular mesh of the contour that we don't know. I mean, if you go on this process with a large number of points, you will get points that are uniformly distributed along the contour, and you'll get a large number of small paths that go all around and complete the contour. Yeah.
So how do you go from getting a point to get the right contour? I know when to stop.
Yeah, I mean there are different ways to do that. I mean, you can put on criterion or some threshold or some different ways. But the fact is that this is this may be depending on some different things. In some cases, it may be unstable, or it may be it may lead to wrong paths, of course. So, in fact, in this example, it works well. That in this example, you get the two circles. I mean, you get the two circles. I mean, the points have will get concentrated on these two circles, and you get the complete curves here. But what happens? Maybe I'll skip this. And what you see here is a case where it doesn't work at all. I mean, here is you are very noisy. What you can see. Because your eye is doing perceptual grouping, you can see here that you have ECCV, which is the name of the conference we presented this. And if you consider what I just said, adding these points iteratively, what happens is that you'll have these points connected together. The only information that is used is the fact that the two fronts meet first. And here, what happens is that if you have this point and this point, since they are very close, they will be connected like this here. So you see that parts of the contour are correct, but parts of the contour are linking two letters. But what you can see in this example is that you have these two points who are linked together. But what you can see is that the path that connects them is orthogonal to the small part of contour here. So this makes think about what we just saw on anisotropic metric. And the fact that here, if you combine this idea with an anisotropic metric, so it means that here, instead of taking just the isotropic metric based on the image, you consider a metric based on the local orientation, which means that from this image, you compute, I mean, there are some methods to do that, to find locally the orientation. So for example, here you have some vertical small parts. So it will extract some vertical orientation. And now you are going to use the idea of adding points and linking points according to the anisotropic metric based on this field, vector field obtained from this image. So it means that from this image, you obtain first by some pre-processing this red vector field. So in each point you have a vector orientation. And then from this vector field, you define an anisotropic metric. And you obtain, by adding these key points iteratively, you link them together. So what I, using the isotropic metrics, the result I just showed before was that you had a very difficult way to find the good contours. While when you use the anisotropic metric both to find the point and to link the points, then you see that the two points that are linked together are points that where the orientation of the field here is coherent with the path that connects the point. So here what you see is that you get the complete contours and from the and this is an automatic process since the points here are added automatically and everything is done so that the points are connected together automatically. So now this is another method that is in some way similar but in some way very different. It is similar because it is also the idea is also to give iteratively to add key points and to use these key points as so that you find a closed contour for a set from which is a set of minimal paths between these key points. So this is a similar way, but the difference here is that is how are you adding these key points. So in the previous method it was using this furthest point strategy. In this approach it is based on the length of the minimal path. So here what you do is that you have a contour. So once again, the example is very simple, and here there's no problem to find the contour. But this is just an illustration to see how the method works. So here you assume that your image, the potential image, is this small contour in which is darker, and the background is higher. So and you wish to find the closed contour here. So you give a starting point here in red, and you compute the minimal action. So this is the fast marching propagation here. And at the same time, you compute the length of the minimal path. This is what we saw yesterday. We have a way at each point to propagate at the same time the length of the minimal path. So which means that you have these points, and you have here some tubular shape, or which can be here a contour. And you have the front propagation inside, and you have the length. At the same time, you compute the length of the minimal path. So what you can see here is that if you consider the front at some time, the front by definition it is a level set of the minimal action, which means that the all points on the front have a similar value of u, which is equal to integral of p. So here if I consider these points, the integral of p is the same as if I consider this point here. Now what you can observe is that the length of the minimal path here is much larger than the length of this minimal path here. So what you would prefer is to have a path which is for all these points have the same energy, the path that I would prefer will be the one which is the longer, because it means that if I divide by the length, I get the average of p along the path, and since the integral of p is the same for this path, when l is the largest, it means that the average value of p will be the smallest. So it makes sense to say that I wish to consider the first point to reach this length. This is something that we presented yesterday. Now, what I'm going to say is that yesterday I used this idea to say I give a starting point and I take my end point will be the first to reach a given length. So the idea now is we're going to iterate this idea. So I give a first point here, P0, and then I find the first point to reach a length lambda will be called P1. And then I iterate the process, which means that I update my geodesic distance from P0 and P1, and I have the front, which will give, here, the first point to reach the length lambda, which means the first point on the front for which the minimal path has length lambda will be, for example, this one, and this one will be called P2. And then you go on the process and you see that this process will the progression of key points can be either on either side of the front, and what you see here is that it covers the whole contour. So now the problem is when to stop this process. So when to stop this process will be a question of what you are looking for. So if you are looking for a closed contour, as we mentioned at the beginning, then we wish to stop this process when the front closes itself, which means that where there is a change in topology, where here, before the front meets itself, the background here has only one connected component, while here you have two connected components. So when this change in topology happens, you stop the propagation and you say that you have closed the contour and you stop. So when you are here, you stop, you have detected this change of topology, you stop, and then from the set of points you found so far, you connect them. So you have many ways of connecting the points. One way is to say that, as we said before, if the Voronoi region are neighbors, then you connect the points. Another way is to say that each time you add a new key point, you keep track of from where it comes. So at that point, when you add P2, you see that the minimal path between P2 and P0, P1 was connected to P1. So you keep track saying that P2 had to be connected to P1. And then when you had a P3, which may be on the other side, it will be connected to P0. So you keep track of where you come from, and then you know which point has to be connected to which. Or you can also use what we said before. It is very similar, in fact. So if you do that, so in green you get the full set of paths, gives you the closed contour. So it's here on a real image. It means that from the image you compute a potential P, so here based on the gradient. You give a starting point on the contour you're looking for, and from this starting point you get here this set of auxiliary points, this set of key points, and this gives you a set of minimal paths which gives you the closed contour. So here the interesting thing is that since you have small paths here, it will avoid many problems that you would have with larger paths. But also it since the paths are each path here is a global minimum of the energy because it is a geodesic path, but globally it's not anymore geodesic because you have a set of geodesic. So you see here some examples in the biologic image here where you give one point in red and you get with this process the yellow points are found and the red paths are found. You get a close contour. So now an interesting application of this method is another way to avoid this kind of shortcut we discussed with the U-shape. So here what you see on this image, you have a kind of U-shape as well, here this object. And if you're looking for the path here that follows the object, and if you give this starting point and this end point, here you have the potential that was extracted. And here, for the same reason we explained, the minimal path, we prefer a short path, a shortcut here that goes in the background rather than following the object. So now when you use, so it means that the global minimum of the geodesic path is this one. Now what you wish to find, which is a path going this way, it means it is not a geodesic path, but if you use what you just said, this key point, adding key points iteratively, it means that these key points, each path here is global minimum, but globally it is not global minimum. So it means that in that case, we use the fact that it is locally a global minimum, but globally, in fact, we prefer that it is not a global minimum. So this is maybe some strange to say that, but it means that here the fact that you progress by small steps avoids to take a wrong decision here and take a shortcut. So in this case, the key points method is used, giving a starting point here. It progresses here along the path, along the object, and the adding key points it stops when you reach the end point. So here it is not a closed contour. You give one starting point and one end point, and you stop the process when the front reaches the end point. Okay. So now this approach can be used for tree structure as well. So you have a tree structure here, you give a starting point here, and what you see is the progression. So here you see the minimal action, the length of the path, and the Voronoi regions. And what you see here is the progression of this method adding key points. So if you give one point here at the beginning, so you see that the key points will propagate inside the different branches. And when you go on, so here you have 18 and here 24 points, you see here that the key points have propagated into all the branches and you are able to find the whole set of branches. So this means that it can be used to segment a tree structure like a vascular tree in medical images. And one question here is how to stop, how to know that you have completed the segmentation. So a way to do that is to define here the green points are called the Harris points, which is very old criteria to find corners in images, corners or end points, and or T junction and end points. And so one way here is to first extract a set. This set of green points are the Harris points, and then propagate the key points in yellow till the front has reached all the green points. And then it means that you have completed your progression and you stop this propagation. Okay. So here is an example on a 3D vascular tree in pulmonary arteries. So you see here some cross-section of the image. Here you see the image by transparency, so what it looks like. And here you give a starting point here. And you see how the front progresses in this image. So you see here the yellow points are the key points. And this method is a way to propagate and enter the different branches till it reaches the whole object. So here you have reached the complete object. So this is a very interesting way of propagating into an object because of the fact that you have these key points. It allows you to progress by small steps and avoid some problems that you may have in propagation method, where if you didn't, I mean, here you use in fact the front as a way to segment an object. So here if you have a tubular object and you give a starting point, your front will go inside the object, but for the reason I mentioned earlier, it can very often you can have a propagation here. By the time that the front has reached the end here, you may go out here, because the minimal path between this point and this point is a small potential over a very long path, will be the same as a high potential over a small path. But which means that by the time you're here, you'll have something we can call flooding that, at the beginning. So we don't have a good segmentation using this kind of image method very often. And this way, since you had these key points, it's a way that you avoid this kind of flooding and have some stable way of segmenting the object. Yeah, what I said, that the blue region is the front. This is the front propagation. So it means that this can be seen as the yellow points can give you the skeleton of the structure, while the blue region gives you the whole structure. So now the same idea can be done also with the space plus radius metric, where you get the central axis plus the width. So here you can do the same. Given here you have a tree structure, you give a starting point here C0, which is the circle, and you add key points in the 2D plus radius space. So these key points correspond in fact to circles, and the path between these key points will give you the complete description of the vessels. So here what we saw yesterday is given starting point and points, you get the central axis plus the segmentation of the vessel, the boundary of the vessel. And here, given just one starting point, using this key point propagation, you can get here the central axis of the whole tree structure plus the boundary of this tree structure. So here is the second example, where you give this starting point and you get these key points which propagate inside the vascular tree and get the whole segmentation. And here in 3D. Yes?
Yes? So if you use a very small step or just people realize, like you might propagate like not calculation was just like, I can discrepancy because there's no like structure of a cube. So like then your path is not like none of them.
No.
So like what about if you have like a very small step compared to the other cube? So like you cut the one point and propagate.
Yeah.
The point you choose won't be the direction of the
cell. Yeah. So it means that the lambda parameter, in fact, this is the parameter of the method. If you choose it too small, what happens? This is what
you're looking at. Also, because the size of the tube can change, like, for example, they can go smaller.
What can be?
If you like relaxed tube, then you can be constant.
Yeah.
So it's not like just a skeleton.
Yeah.
Something.
Oh yes, this is what happened. Yeah. So once again, you are free to choose the parameters according to what you're going to solve. I mean, you have many problems that you can solve with the same method. But now, if your problem is finding a set of paths, here, in order to be useful, the fact that you're looking for geodesics and that you have global minimum of the energy, it makes sense only if the lambda is not too small. So you have to take lambda not too small, which means not too small relatively to the resolution of the image, of course. And also you don't wish to take lambda too large, because the goal of the method is to avoid problems you have if you take the points too far one from the other. So now, except from very small and very large, you have a very large range of values where lambda that gives basically the same result. I mean, this is very stable relatively to lambda when you are not very small or very large.
Is there a way to choose?
Yeah. I mean, automatically. I mean, we didn't do it, but you have ways of defining lambda according to what you're the size of the structure you're looking for.
And you give it the same as well, the structure of the image can
change. Yeah. So, yes, in the method you all use the same lambda. Now, it may be a good idea to change the lambda according to locally. Locally changing structure. It may be interesting. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So since we are at the end of the session, I will just give an introduction to geodesic voting, but we'll present it next course, because it is. I would not like to stop in the middle. So now we've seen different methods in order to get segmentation of tubular structure, tree structure, and we propose here another method that. Contrary to the other methods we saw, instead of using the paths themselves, it will find a way to. It will use the path to find some information. I explain. I mean, here in these methods here, you use the path between pairs of points to find the structure. In all we've seen so far, we use geodesic paths to find contours or to find structures that are useful. Now, what we are going to do here, is in order to find a tree structure here, we're going to define what is what we can call geodesic density, which is given a starting point. So given a starting point here, what you do is finding the geodesic path between this starting point and all points on the boundary of the image. So you have here path that here the path, here you assume that you have a very simple potential, which is small on the tree structure, large on the background, which means that since it is constant on the background, the path, the part of the path which is on the background will be straight lines that will try to join some branch to and then follow the branch. So here, for example, all these points that are here, they will all go first to the end of this branch and then follow the branch till it reaches the starting point. So you have a whole bunch of paths here which all merge and go here along the same branch. Which and the same for all these paths here, they merge to these points and reach here. So it means that the here, if you make a zoom on this part, you see that all these paths come here and merge and here close one to the other. So now the idea of the geodesic density is to say that to count how many paths are passing by a point locally. So you see that if you are here, you have only one path that passes by. Now if you are here on this branch, you see that you have all these paths, so dozens of paths that passes by here. So this is the definition of geodesic density. And what you see is that here you have on this branch, for example, you have all these paths that come here, so they give a large value of the density. So here you see the scale. So in the background you have 0 or 1, so it appears as very dark blue. And when you reach this branch or this branch, you have some hundred values. And here on this part, you have all the paths that comes either from this branch or from this branch merge, which means that the density is the sum of the two densities, and it gives a higher value. And the same thing appears above. So you have this branch which has a very high density, this branch as well, and the two branches merge to give a large density here. And so from this image, what you see is that you have a way using this density of paths to make to underline the tree structure. So in fact, here the tree structure appears to be the set of points for which the geodesic density is large. And this large is very large because here you see that you get in the background 0 or 1, and on the structure you have something that is over 100. So you have a very high difference between the tree structure and the background. And so you obtain the tree structure very easily by thresholding this geodesic density. So you can see here on a real image, biologic image, given a starting point in the middle and using these end points all for all the points on the boundary of the image domain, you get here the geodesic density will give you a good way to find this tree structure. So now in fact I give you the main idea, and next week we'll explain in detail that this first definition is not so well working so well, but we'll give some improvement and also some way to use this very efficiently for tubular tree structure. Okay.
How much are the trees are sensible to noise and images? And the question is, how you assess the quality of your like solution, like you also method, but how you know if it's good or bad?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So for about the noise, in fact, the fact is that the noise it comes from the definition of the potential. So if you have some noise, I mean, normally the fact that you use geodesics that are global minimum of the energy, it is in some way not so sensitive to noise. Now, of course, there's if it is very very noisy, it can give a wrong estimate. But this kind of method is relatively less sensitive than others to noise. For example, I talked about active controls at the beginning. Active controls are very sensitive to noise, while here with geodesic paths you are less sensitive. Now, the second thing is that how to measure. So we'll see, for example, for the geodesic voting, how to measure. You can compare the two shapes using the Hausdorff distance of the two shapes, which means that you compare you assume that you have the ground truth, which is the exact result you wish to find. And you compare the result you found with it by computing this kind of distance between two shapes. Well, it can be computed. Okay. Yeah. Which one? This one? Yeah, it's CT, I think. No, I mean, it represents pulmonary arteries, but the modality, I think, is CT. What? Only one? Yeah, I mean, in this method, it is just you start with one point, and then you automatically add it a key point. It's actually, but the user provides only one point, and even this first point could be determined automatically in if you have a specific application. Yeah, I mean, you should find the same result. I mean, the best way, in fact, to be less sensitive to the first point is to remove the first point afterwards. I mean, to start with the second point. I mean, the second point you find, you will be sure it is reliable. The first point you give, maybe you have given it slightly outside the control. So it will have a bad result just for the first path connected here. So if you wish to remove this problem, you can remove this point and start with the first added key point.
Last time. So set your internal clock from 2 to 3:30. find the k point.
Yeah.
Can you propagate it next, for example, the distance is lambda?
Yeah.
And how you choose whether the left, the second one is this or this one?
I don't select. I mean, it is automatic. I mean, it is the first.
So you just get this together as the second one, or?
Well, no, I mean, it will choose the first point to reach some value.
Yeah.
So it can be this one or this one.
So you can make, for example,
it doesn't matter.
This one and the second one, but if in this case the third one maybe go this way and it's like.
It doesn't matter because when you arrive here at the end of the branch.
Yeah.
Then it will, here the potential will be higher.
Right.
So it will not go on here, and then it will go.
So it will return.
No, it doesn't return because it is. I mean, each point is connected to the previous, to one of the previous points, not to the last point.
But I mean, if in the right order, for example, if the branch ends here.
Yeah.
So then, how the computer loads. You should go there and instead of end the whole process.
No, because once again, you have your front here.
Yes.
At some point, you have your front like this.
Oh, it's the front of the whole picture.
Yeah, you have the front from
not
the whole.
The set front of just the.
No, you have the front of all the points.
Oh, okay.
So the front, when it cannot propagate anymore in this direction, then it will prefer to propagate in this direction.
It's front of all the points. I thought
it's a problem.
Thanks.
So, just like something like, I won't be able to make it on Monday. I don't know if you can either post the slideshow. People will just send it to me because I want to.
Monday morning or Monday the whole day?
I won't be there on Monday the whole day.
Oh, okay. No, because I will give a talk in the computer science department on Monday afternoon on the same subject.
No, but.
Okay.
I will be.
And this afternoon, I'm going to York University. But
it was something else, like more general, like this.
No, it's exactly the geodetic voting.
Five talks in one, no?
No, because the geodetic voting is very recent.
Are you doing this afternoon? At what time?
At 3 o'clock at York University.
And
but
it's connecting at 3.
But
3:30.
Yeah. Okay, so if not, you'll have the slides, I think.
But I was thinking then before Tuesday, or?
What?
Because I would like to read it before, because like it helps to see before.
Okay. I'll give it before on Monday. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
There was something, I don't know if I said it, but I really in the end I couldn't convince the. I know many people, so they would give me the DPI that I was talking about. I mean, the final answer is no. Which is a disappointment. And actually, there's apparently it's another company which we work with, which are the guys that actually do the scans. And then in part they say privacy issues because it's friends of people and they want to send them around, but I guess it's also protecting their own things. I mean, it takes a lot of work to get the data. So if only they can use the data, only they can get the papers.
Okay.
Actually use them, so that's a bit dead. I mean, I even talked to these students who kind of, even without asking them, the things to try, but
okay.
Even that wasn't possible.
Okay.
I would like to do that, but I don't know how. I never found anyone that would have.
So you try to check on the Mikai challenges? Maybe there was a Mikai challenge on this kind of images, I don't know.
I don't know.
Maybe we can have a look? Or
well, it's relatively new, this. On the PI kind of thing. Oh. I also try to look like just in the internet find the proper data and for a cryptography of DPI
launch plans?
I think this afternoon I'm giving a seminar at York University.
Oh, okay.
So you know James Elder? Maybe no. No, in fact, he visited us in Paris a few years ago. So, mm-hmm. so I told him I was visiting.
Okay.
So
I was prepared to come eat kosher with you. All right. So
actually, if you wish, we can go and eat.
But I mean, it's actually takes a while to get there. When do you have to be there?
Yeah, I have to.
Is he picking you up? Or
no, he told me to go by metro,
uh-huh.
by subway.
Yes. When do you have to be there?
No, he said it's about 1 hour to go there.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
We can leave it for. I mean, next week is going to be a little crazy with Candes here.
Yeah. Okay.
Can have coffee sometime, it's not a problem.
Mm-hmm. But if you wish, we can go, because it's a good direction for me. I mean, it's
Oh, I see, I should take you.
I mean, if you wish.
North.
If you wish to. No, it's not so far from here. There are kosher restaurants in. Which are in. Wilson and Bathurst.
Wilson and Bathurst. Okay, let's go.
You wish to go there?
Sure.
Okay.
And then I'll leave you at the subway stop in
yeah.
Bathurst.
Oh, okay.
So when do you have to be?